Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Williams looks to go forward with it. What an effort by Justin Williams once again tonight in a game seven. Wilson couldn't get his stick on the puck. Hurricanes keep it alive. Williams towards the net. Score! The Carolina Hurricanes win game seven.
Todd Reardon shake hands, but it goes to the front of the net. Knocks that puck out of midair. And Brock McGinn with the redirect out of midair.
Welcome into another edition of Unleashing Fury on the Fan, Richmond.com. I'm your host, Jordan Bondurant. And as you heard, that was the sound that Caps fans have known and absolutely hate is the sound of a season coming to a close without a championship. The Carolina Hurricanes overcame a 2-0 deficit in Game 7 of their first round series against the Washington Capitals. And won Game 7 in Capital One Arena in D.C., 3-2 in double overtime. I was there. I was in the press box for that game. Washington jumped out to a 2-0 lead early. It seemed like all was well. The Caps were 20 minutes away from a date with the New York Islanders in the next round, but it wasn't meant to be. And, you know, all it takes is a little lightning in a bottle to win a Stanley Cup. Washington had it in 2018 and 2019, not so much. Took a little bit of a hiatus. I'm glad to be back. I'm here to help preview free agency for the Caps this summer, as well as the 2019 NHL draft for the Caps. JJ Regan from NBC Sports Washington is going to join me. He brings a wealth of knowledge as an insider, and I'm really excited for you guys to hear this. If you haven't listened to it already, I have the interview itself posted, but obviously I figured I would post some ramblings in between that, like I have throughout the 2018-19 season, and hopefully you guys have enjoyed it so far. I got the chance to report on that series for News Radio WRVA and 910 The Fan here in Richmond. It was awesome. It was an incredible experience. I'm so thankful for that opportunity to be among the national and international media that were in D.C. and in Raleigh for that series. I got to introduce myself in person to guys like Ben Raby and JJ Regan, who, as you know, have appeared on this show multiple times. So it was nice to put a face with a name, as I'm sure for them it was to see me and know who I am and put a face with a name. So what can I say about the 2018-19 Washington Capitals? It started off so glorious with a 7-0 thumping of what would be the eventual Eastern Conference champion Boston Bruins the night that Washington raised its Stanley Cup championship banner to the rafters of Capital One Arena. I was there at that game as a spectator, as you might know. I'm sure I've said it enough that it probably nauseates you to hear me say that, but I was there. It was awesome. And then, you know, there are highs and lows in every hockey season, and there was a high and a low point. The low point came in January. Washington was on a 7-game losing streak. almost unheard of for a team like this. And then you think about all of the talent that this team has. And how could they be playing like that? But as I said, it was only January. They managed to turn things around. They stayed healthy. And they won another Metro Division title, which is great. They were the top seed of the playoff teams in the Metro Division. Nobody was going to catch Tampa. Tampa had an incredible regular season, but then they absolutely laid a dud in the first round of the playoffs. And Columbus, who I mentioned in my trade deadline show, Columbus finally, the Columbus Blue Jackets win a postseason series. So many years, there's kind of a Capitals feel to it. You know, you're used to so much heartache, all the excitement of a regular season, then you get to the playoffs, the team makes the playoffs, and cynicism sets in. You're like, yeah, the season was fun, but I know what's going to happen. They're going to get our hopes up, and then they're going to crush our dreams, and we're going to hit the bottle when it does. But for Columbus and John Tortorella, they shocked John Cooper. They shocked Nikita Kucherov. They shocked Steven Stamkos. Won that first round series. And it was glorious to watch. Almost as glorious to watch the New York Islanders sweep the Pittsburgh Penguins, the hated Pittsburgh Penguins. Barry Trotz, fresh off a Stanley Cup win with the Caps in 2018, decides to go to the Islanders. Islanders fans at the start of the season were hurting real bad. And they let that hurt known when John Tavares and the Toronto Maple Leafs eventually made their way to Long Island. And say what you want, but I didn't really have a problem with how Islanders fans reacted to John Tavares being inside Nassau Coliseum for the first time as an opponent. A lot of Islanders fans feel like Tavares did that team dirty, did that franchise, did that fan base dirty. And some folks in the hockey media don't think so. They think that Islanders fans are being overdramatic, that they should have just gotten over it. You know? But how many umpteen thousand days has it been since the Toronto Maple Leafs won a Stanley Cup? And until Toronto wins something other than an NBA championship. By the way, if you're a Toronto sports fan, if you're a diehard Maple Leafs fan, how much does that hurt to know that a franchise that's been in existence a quarter of the time as one of the most beloved sports franchises in that country, in Canada, between the Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens, it's hard to think of any other sports franchises that aren't as beloved by an entire nation. Montreal and Toronto, one of the original six. The history is there. And yet, it's been 60-some years since the last Toronto Maple Leaf Stanley Cup. Montreal had a little bit of luck in the years after that, but they're on quite a bit of a drought, too. But when it comes to the Caps, I don't know. I didn't think I didn't think that a repeat was in order. You know, as much as people love to hear that back-to-back chant from the Stanley Cup parade, I didn't think... I was optimistic, but I told people I would not have been surprised if Washington didn't win the Stanley Cup in 2019. And being in the press box, obviously there's no cheering in the press box. I think as a professional and as a hockey fan, as a Caps fan, there was probably about one or two times where I felt compelled to cheer for the Caps while I was in DC in the press box at a game. I didn't cheer. Oddly enough, there were members of the Raleigh media sitting next to me that cheered in the press box. But obviously, there are unwritten rules in journalism. You know, so it's not necessarily, I think it is a written rule somewhere. And in some press boxes, that rule is enforced. But at least on the other end of the press box, I will say this. I learned that, you know, the press boxes in some of these arenas are massive. And they're separated by the TV booths. You know, for hockey, at least, it's not like basketball where you're right on top of the action. The TV guys and the radio guys are just like us in the regular media, the traditional media, in that they have to use their binoculars half the time, or they're watching the TV feed to see what's going on. They can't, you know, they're not on top on the glass and able to see what's going on. They have a bird's eye view of everything. And those TV booths and the radio booths and the replay and the officials and everything, you know, it's a super long hallway that separates the two sections of press box at Capital One Arena. So that was kind of cool to experience for the first time. And actually, I think it's colder. I actually think it's colder in the press box than it is actually sitting in the seats anywhere else in the arena. Even at ice level, I was a little more comfortable at ice level than I was in the press box. And that goes for Raleigh too. But I don't know. Another season of Caps hockey has come and gone. And while Washington didn't win at all in 2019, I still take solace in the fact that they did it. They can't take that away from them and the fans, that Washington has a Stanley Cup. They'll forever be a Stanley Cup championship team. A Stanley Cup winning franchise. Ted Leonsis, a dream come true for him. And for fans that went to Capital Center in Landover, Maryland, when the team first formed in 1974. Some fans have since passed on. May not have lived to see the first Stanley Cup championship in team history. But It'll forever be in history that Washington finally exercised the demons of Pittsburgh series pass and won it all. And they have one of the greatest players ever to do it, leading them in Alex Ovechkin. So a lot to look forward to, especially with the 2019 season on the horizon. We're less than 3 months from the start of the preseason. So, you know, the draft is this weekend. If you're listening on Thursday when this episode's going up, It's June 19th, so the NHL draft will be June 21st and June 22nd in Vancouver at Rogers Place, I want to say. I think that's right. It's hard to tell with some of these arena names now. They change arena names so so quickly. I remember when it was MCI Center and not Verizon Center. But then I remember when it was Verizon Center and not Capital One Arena. But anyways, like I said, JJ Regan is here to break down what's gone on in Capitals free agency. Carl Hagelin signed to a 4-year, $11 million deal. He was talking about how excited he is to remain in D.C., play in front of these fans. And then Radko Gudas acquired in a trade with the Philadelphia Flyers. Gudas exchanged for Matt Niskanen, who is now a member of the Philadelphia Flyers. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. And I'll let JJ sort of explain the pros and cons of a guy like Gudas, as well as some other things. I started the interview off by mentioning to JJ that there are three other unrestricted free agents on the Caps this summer: Brett Connolly, Brooks Orpik, and Devontae Smith-Pelly. I asked him what he thought the likelihood was of the Caps signing either one or possibly all three of them to new deals. Here's his response and the interview.
I think all three of those guys are going to be gone. I think if they could sign Brett Connolly, they would. But at the end of the day, this is a guy with over 20 goals in a pretty limited role for the Capitals. I think there are going to be teams out there that will offer him more money and a bigger role. And so ultimately, I think he will re-sign elsewhere. I just don't think they have the money under the cap to get a deal done with him. He would be the one that I would anticipate they would want to keep the most. Brooks Orpik, I think as soon as they made the trade for Radko Gudas, who is a guy who brings a lot of the same things, at least on the ice, he doesn't have the intangible benefits, the leadership qualities, but he does a lot of the same sort of things on the ice. I think that ship officially sailed about whether or not he would be back. And Devontae Smith-Pelly, at the end of the season, I think it was clear that that was over. After, you know, heading into the season, there were questions about his conditioning right away. And then he ended up going to the minors late in the season. So it wasn't a great season for him by any stretch. And it really should have been hit with all the momentum from the Stanley Cup win. He didn't take advantage of that. And really, he was just unproductive. And really, with depth scoring being a weakness for this team, I don't think you can commit a roster spot to a guy who you don't know if can be productive enough to even stay on your roster through the full season.
And, you know, other restricted free agents, obviously you have unrestricted free agents who can talk to any team, whereas restricted free agents, I guess, have to work within certain confines before they can seek contracts elsewhere. But you have the restricted free agents this summer in Andrei Burakovsky, Jacob Vrana, and Christian Juice. What's the likelihood of all three of them getting new contracts with Washington?
So the wild card here is Andrei Burakovsky. I think Jacob Vrana is absolutely going to resign. I think they love what he brought. I think he loves it in Washington. I don't think there's going to be any question there that he's going to be brought back. Christian Juice, he had a down year. I think he was a big part of the championship run. So they're definitely going to bring him back, and especially because I think they could do that for relatively low cost. The wild card, as I said, is Andrei Burakovsky. The problem is to qualify him and to retain his rights as a restricted free agent, you'd have to qualify him by offering him a 1-year deal for $3.25 million. This is a guy who has had inconsistencies throughout his career, and injury problems throughout his career, and who's scored 12 goals in each of the last three seasons. $3.25 million is too much for a player like that. So what do? Can you try to get him to sign for a lower cap hit? I think that might be – I don't know this, but I think they might have a chance. This is the only team that he's ever known. And a guy who's dealing with confidence issues at times, I think it would help him to stay in the same place. But then again, maybe a change of scenery is exactly what this guy needs. Maybe the team has decided to move on from him because he's too inconsistent. Yeah, he's a guy who can be an asset as a bottom six player, but he was someone who was a first-round draft pick for Washington. So I think the bar is set higher for him here, and he just is not living up to those expectations. If the team can lower that bar and look at him as a bottom six forward and he can exceed those expectations, great. But otherwise, I think it may be best for him to have a change of scenery. It may be best for the team to not hope that he's going to have that breakthrough season that we've been waiting for years that never seems to happen. So I think potentially we could see him, his rights get traded prior to free agency to see if maybe they won't get much for it, but to try to salvage something if they do in fact intend to move on from him.
I hear you. It sounds like an interesting situation for sure. And you mentioned a change of scenery and also the acquisition of Radko Gudas, obviously traded from Philadelphia, and Matt Niskanen sent up Interstate 95 to the Flyers in exchange. We know that Gudas has a reputation for being physical and drawing penalty minutes. He also absolutely compliments Tom Wilson in that regard. But in your opinion, what kind of upside does Gudas bring to Washington?
Yeah, so this was an interesting trade because I, like most people, as soon as I saw it, I thought, wow, so the Caps got worse in this trade. And the more you look at it, that's actually not the case. Radko Gudas got voted as the team's best defenseman by the media in Philadelphia for last season. He had a good year. This is a player with some upside. I know he comes with a lot of baggage. He comes with a reputation, and it's well-deserved. Yeah, he's going to be compared to Tom Wilson. I don't think they're comparable. I think Tom Wilson sometimes gets in trouble for being overzealous with his hits. But if you watch the situations Radko Gudas got suspended for, those were intentional. It looks like he's intentionally trying to do harm. So yeah, I think his reputation as a dirty player is earned. But at the same time, he has tried to clean up his game. His penalty minutes have decreased in each of the last three seasons. He had only 63 last year, which would rank second in the Caps. It's not good, but it's better than the over 100 he had four seasons ago and is about half of what Tom Wilson had last season. This is a guy who has some upgrade. Analytically speaking, he would actually be an upgrade from Matt Niskanen. I'm not sure I would actually buy that considering all the intangibles that come with Matt Niskanen as a leader, as a steady player, as someone who you don't have to worry about taking liberties and end up getting a massive suspension. Because that's where we are with Radko Gudas right now. He's in the Tom Wilson category of the next one's going to be a big one. So the next hit, you're one hit away from losing him for 20 games, which is not ideal. But if he stays clean and keeps his nose clean, I think he can be a very good third pair defenseman. He's a right shot. Both Jonas Siegenthaler and Christian Jews are left shots. So I think he's a good fit for that third pair. He's a physical guy, obviously, has a physical presence, but he's a better puck mover than I think a lot of people realize. He's very good at getting the puck off his stick and out of the zone on first pass. So this is a guy with more upside than I think a lot of people realize, and he could end up making this defense a little bit better than it was last year.
It'll definitely be interesting to see how it all plans out for sure. I remember Radko Gudas from his development in the Tampa system. I actually remember him as a member of the Norfolk Admirals. I think he was on that Admirals team that set that North American professional record for, I think they won like 20 some games in a row. And so it's just interesting to see him, become this sort of player, and it does come full circle, you know, at least for me to see him now as a member of the Capitals, a team that, you know, I cover professionally, but I also definitely root for myself. But moving on from that, you know, we look at free agency. You know, we've got a couple of guys, Braden Holtby and Nick Backstrom, are coming up in contract years. And it seems like a lot of what the Capitals are trying to do are maybe trying to set themselves up for next summer in a way, if they feel like Nick Backstrom and Braden Holtby are deserving of you know, contract extensions or new deals. Do you sort of feel that way, in that this is kind of what it's building up to, is that next summer when you've got two marquee players in Backstrom and Holtby getting ready to hit the free agent market?
Yeah, somewhat. The Gudas deal, Matt Niskanen had 2 years left on his contract. Gudas has only one. So by next year, all that money is now gone off their cap, which should help them sign at least one of them. I think the way they're looking at it, this is just my opinion, but I think if they could get a deal with Nicklas Backstrom done, they would do it right away. Now, since these guys have 1 year left on their deal, they can't technically negotiate with them until July 1st. But I think if they could get Backstrom done this summer, they would. Holtby, I don't think so. And the reason why, there's a few reasons why. Sergei Bobrovsky is going to probably break the bank and get a massive deal. Sergei Bobrovsky is the same age now as Holtby will be next year when Holtby hits free agency. Their numbers in the regular season are identical. These two have been some of the best goalies in the league. The difference is that when you get to the playoffs, Holtby is lights out compared to Bobrovsky, and he has a cup. So by all accounts, Holtby should be worth more than Bobrovsky, and Bobrovsky could get $10 million-plus on his next deal. I don't think the Caps can afford that. Plus, their top prospect in their system is Ilya Samsonov, who's a goalie. So I think there's a lot riding on this year, especially with the Seattle expansion draft looming, when teams are only allowed to protect one goalie. I don't think it makes sense to re-sign Holtby if you think Samsonov can be your starter, because all of a sudden you're committing a heck of a lot of money to Holtby. Plus, if I'm Holtby, I'm asking for a no-movement clause, because I see Seattle, and I'm not signing anywhere long-term just to get moved and picked by Seattle. Well, the Caps can't do that if they want Samsonov to be their starter, because, like I said, you can only protect one goalie. So I think everything is in a holding pattern with Holtby to see how both he and Samsonov perform this year, to see if Samsonov may be ready to take over the reins next year when Holtby's deal expires. And I know fans may hate to hear that, but it's just part of the business. I don't think the Caps can afford, or they certainly would like to not have to pay a goalie who's over 30, or who will be by that point, $10-plus million, when you've got the future starter waiting in the wings in Hershey.
Interesting. Interesting for sure. And like you said, it will just come down to performance and how that all pans out, especially for a guy like Holtby. And you do mention Seattle, who will be gearing up to put a team together here in the not too distant future. So looking ahead to free agency this summer, in terms of the Caps, what kind of needs do they have, and what are they going to look to address in terms of personnel, if in fact, you know, they don't bring guys like Brooks Orpik, DSP, and maybe Brett Connolly back?
So the big thing for them, and pretty much the only thing, is going to be depth scoring. They're going to need some bottom six forwards. They're set in the top six. The top six is all coming back. Assuming they re-sign Christian Juice, they're going to have seven defensemen, so their blue line is set. The only thing they need is bottom six. In the seven games that they played in the playoffs, their bottom six accounted for only 5 goals. That's not enough, especially when you consider that one of those goals was a penalty shot and one of those goals was an empty netter. That's not enough. And now throw in the fact that 2 of those goals came from Brett Connolly, who's about to walk out the door. They desperately need some guys who can produce on those bottom two lines. So usually when it comes to restricted free agents, most of these guys it's assumed that they're going to re-sign. With the salary cap and their salary cap situation being what it is, I don't know if it's a slam dunk if they bring back a guy like Chandler Stephenson or Dmitri Yashkin, considering the offensive upside might not necessarily be there for those two. It's really hard to figure out what they might do, considering that the salary cap hasn't been set yet and may not be set until Saturday. And even so, it was projected to be $83 million, and now there are a lot of reports out there that it could be in the $81.5 to $82 million. And for a team like the Cavs, who are going to be right up against the salary cap, that's not an insignificant difference. That's huge for them and huge for their plans. You know, not knowing what the cap is, it's hard to tell. I think if it goes to 82, 83, I think they may have room for one semi-significant contributor, maybe a $3 to $4 million guy. I keep seeing reports that they're all in on Marcus Johansson. I don't see how they can do that unless they move money. He performed very well at the biggest stage in the Stanley Cup final. I don't see how his price tag is not beyond what they can afford at this point, but he's the sort of guy that they need. They need a guy who can fit on the third line and produce in limited minutes. That's what they need. And they also need to upgrade their fourth line. Your fourth line just can't be your checking line anymore. It has to contribute with some goals as well. So maybe a guy like Brian Boyle would be a good fit there. But just maybe Noel Achari, who played very well for Boston throughout the playoffs. So those would be the big needs. They definitely need depth scoring. They need a upper scale top, a bottom six forward to stick on their third line if Brett Connolly leaves. And they need to upgrade their fourth line. So the free agency should be offense heavy for the Caps.
Looking ahead to the draft in Vancouver this weekend, the Caps own the number 25 spot in the draft order. If the Caps decide to stay at 25, and I'll follow up on that in a second, who is likely to be the 2019 first-round pick of the Caps?
Well, it's always hard to project the NHL draft, especially because most of these players you're not going to see for several years. So I'll try to narrow it down a little bit. I think they'd be crazy not to go offense at this point. They haven't picked an offensive player in the first round since Jacob Vrana. So I think they're going to be looking for a forward. From there, they like speed. They are very attuned to the direction that the NHL is going. They do value size, but I think they like a guy who can skate well and who's very smart. I think they will trade size for a good hockey IQ and speed. So, you know, you always got to look at the WHL. They really like the pipeline from the WHL. You always have to look to Europe. They are one team who is never afraid to draft out of Europe. So if you're trying to narrow it down, that's what I would say. Look for a forward, either someone from the WHL or Canada, someone who has good speed, good hands, and a good hockey IQ.
And like you said, I did see that, you know, they are potentially in the market to trade up in the draft order. If so, where do you sort of see them trying to slide in?
So this is really interesting because it makes sense for them to want to try to trade up because they have the 25th pick and because they are so barren for high-end offensive talent. It would make total sense to me for them to try to trade up. On the other hand, there are a lot of reports coming out that they're in go-for-it mode. They are in win-now mode. And if you are in that, then maybe they try to actually trade down. Maybe they dangle that first-round draft pick as trade bait to a team looking to move up. It's weird to say that I think they're more likely to trade up when they're in win-now mode, but I think this year it's sort of caught up to them that they don't have offensive prospects or high-end ones because this is the year where they don't have much money, where they need guys to fill in the bottom six, and they don't have those options, that it's really coming back to bite them. So I would not be surprised, even though they're in win-now mode, even though they're trying to go for it, I would not be surprised if they look to trade up, because this could actually be a benefit for them in two ways. If you're trying to shed salary, you could offer them your pick, plus maybe one of those players that you're not sure on, maybe the rights to Andre Burakovsky, something like that, to try to entice a team. I don't think they have enough trade assets where they could get up into the top 10, but I do think that maybe you'd be looking at the top 15 potentially. So I think the most likely scenario is they either trade up to about the top 15 or trade down out of the first round completely.
And then, you know, it's a long weekend. Obviously, there are multiple rounds. there's a lot of emphasis on sort of the first round, at least, and you know, especially the first three guys to go. You have guys like Jack Hughes, who are going to be the number one overall pick, who seem to be NHL ready, whereas that's not necessarily the case for teams like the Caps, who draft guys in the later stages of the first round and beyond. And just to kind of segue from that, the Caps made seven picks in 2018, and it looked like all seven of those picks either remained in junior hockey, or in the case of Martin Fervieri, if I'm saying that name right, stayed with their professional team in Europe. And so I was just wondering, could you kind of fill in listeners on sort of how that works, especially in hockey, where it's not like in other sports where if you get drafted, it's sort of a use it or lose it situation, whereas in hockey you kind of have guys that they get drafted, they may sign a contract, and then they will go back to playing either junior hockey or they'll stay in Europe and play professionally versus trying to take up a spot on a minor league roster.
Sure. So the vast majority of players who get drafted in the draft, even the vast majority of the first round draft picks, will not play in the NHL next year. Very few of them actually will. It's not rare at all, and that happens a lot. A lot of them are in junior hockey and their junior leagues. A lot of them will stay there. Even if they are very good in their junior teams, there is an agreement between most of those junior leagues and the NHL and the AHL saying that those players can only go to the NHL, but they cannot go to the AHL until they are out of junior hockey. So even if you like a prospect and think he is above playing junior hockey, unless he's ready for the NHL, he's going to stay there until his time with the juniors is up. A lot of these players, you mentioned Martin Fervieri. He signed a contract with the Capitals, but he stayed in Europe. There are provisions in these contracts that say, I believe it is a 10-game cutoff. You have to play 10 games for the first year of that contract to be burned. So even though he's under contract, he did not burn a year of that contract by staying in Europe. And the way that's set up is just because these players, it takes so long for them to develop that they don't want to have to sign a player for 6 years or risk losing him before after his first contract is up. There are some time limits for these things. The big one is 4 years. I think most people know about these from the college players. So there are provisions for college players where if you play 4 years of college hockey, then you once August 15th hits, you are officially a free agent and can sign with any team. So that is the only real time limit that these guys have, is that four-year window to get these guys under contract. And that's why you see a lot of NHL teams push to sign players as soon as their season ends in college, because they don't want them to reach that senior year and end up losing that player come August 15th. That very thing is about to happen to the Capitals. Chase Prisky was a highly regarded defenseman for them, who just finished his senior year at Quinnipiac, and he informed the team this spring that he would not be signing with them, and he would elect to wait to August 15th to become a free agent. So in terms of time limit, in most cases, you don't really have to worry about that in hockey. It's understood that most of these guys are going to take several years to develop, and it's very unique in that sense. It's more like baseball than it is the NFL or basketball. In that sense. And that's why for 99% of the time, you draft for need you draft for best available player, because if these guys are going to take several years to develop and you need a forward right now, it doesn't make sense to skip on what could potentially be a superstar defenseman or a superstar goalie just because you need a forward, because you may not see that forward in several years. And I think you see teams make that mistake where they get so focused on a position that they let superstars walk. And I know it's funny to say, after I just said the Capitals must get a forward, but I think that's part of the reason why they may trade up is because they see the higher end forwards starting to go early on in the draft, and that's why what could drive them to make a trade and trade up to get one of those higher, those high end forwards.
I really appreciate you explaining that, because I've always wondered that is, you know, you see these guys get drafted, especially in the first round and everything, and you go, wait a minute, I'm looking at these ECHL rosters, or, you know, I'm looking at the South Carolina Stingrays roster, and these guys are nowhere to be found. What's the deal? So it's interesting to get that sort of, you know, that backstory behind it. So I appreciate that for sure. And so I've got two more for you, and then I'll let you go. The first is that it was announced that the 2020 NHL draft will be held in Montreal. And over the last 20 years or so, it's been rotating between different NHL cities. Washington has never hosted an NHL draft or an All-Star game. So do you know if the Caps front office has any plans to bid for either event? And do you feel like D.C. would be a great setting for an NHL draft weekend?
I have not heard of any plans to host either. I don't know that there would be much benefit to something like the draft, where that's really, really, you have to be a really big hockey fan to be sort of into that. I don't think it's ultimately all that fan-friendly for people to show up, wait for hours, so that your team can draft a bunch of players you never heard of and who you won't see for many years. I've wondered why there has been more momentum for the Capitals to get an All-Star game. I think when you have guys, when you win the Cup in 2018 and you have superstar players, and Washington is starting to bubble up into a good hockey market, I don't know why they wouldn't try to take advantage of that, especially for a team they put in three outdoor games the last few years. So you see, it would seem to make sense to try to do that, especially when every year there's a question when Alex Ovechkin inevitably gets picked, whether or not he's going to play. You've seen him skip a few years now and again. If you have it here, at least you guarantee that he'll be here. So I have not heard any specific plans. I don't know if the draft would make a whole lot of sense for this area, but I do think that an All-Star game would be a great event for Washington, D.C. I think it would make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, and I mean, and you sort of mentioned on it, and, you know, Monumental Sports and Entertainment is pouring all this money into Capital One Arena improvements, and, you know, they're doing all this work, and you'll see new scoreboards and LED lighting and stuff all around the arena. You would think that they would want to sort of put this stuff on display for, you know, an international audience. But I guess obviously the brains behind all that stuff seem to maybe know a little more about it than us. But it is interesting to speculate on for sure. But one last thing before I let you go, and this is a draft question. Can you tell me or think back to maybe what are the top two or three most memorable important draft picks or trades in your opinion in Capitals history?
Oh boy. Well, I mean, the first obviously would be Alex Ovechkin, a guy who was so coveted that actually this is one of my favorite draft stories. The Florida Panthers, Alex Ovechkin fell 2 days after the cutoff date for eligible draft picks. So right after the eligible year when Florida had the number one overall pick. They wanted him so bad, they petitioned the NHL that they should count leap years, that if you counted the leap years, technically Ovechkin would fall into their window where they would be allowed to draft him.
Interesting.
So they desperately wanted to draft him. They made that argument. I think they actually did try to draft him anyway until the NHL just told them to stop, that it wasn't going to happen. So obviously, you know, that day, getting the ping pong balls to fall your way and get the number one overall pick on a year, you know, sometimes there aren't those generational talents available in the draft. Sometimes you don't get those players. We saw Edmonton, they got four number one picks recently, and only one of them turned into a generational talent. So Alex Ovechkin would definitely be the most memorable. There's also the year when they picked Nicholas Backstrom. They had Ovechkin announce the pick. And they were actually Boston tried to trade for that pick. And the Capitals were willing to listen to them. But George McPhee, who was the general manager at the time, asked, who are you guys going to take? And they said the Swede. And McPhee knew that they were trying to trade up to get Backstrom. And so he said no, and then went with the pick, picked Backstrom, and it speaks for itself. So those are the good. The bad, obviously, Philip Forsberg. You get this high-end offensive talent. They got him, I believe, 12th overall, and less than a year later, they end up trading him away to the Nashville Predators for Martin Erat and Michael Latta. So he never ended up putting on a Caps jersey and playing at the NHL level. You got to wonder what happened in that year to make them sour so much on that one player. But luckily for them, they had Tom Wilson, I think, four picks later. They had two first-round draft picks that year. So that draft was not a total bust. They ended up with Tom Wilson, who is finally turning into a top-line player after a few years of questioning. But so definitely some good times and some bad times at the draft for sure.
Once again, that was J.J. Regan of NBC Sports Washington. You can find him on Twitter at J.J. Regan NBCS. I really appreciate his time coming on here in the off-season, and I sincerely appreciate him devoting some time to talk to me and give you guys some great content throughout the 2018-19 season, and I look forward to connecting with him again in the 2019-2020 season. And he made a lot of good points. There's obviously a lot to break down here after that interview, and let's just take this a little bit at a time here, and let's just start with the free agents, the pending free agents on Washington that played for Washington last season. And you're talking about a third of the skater roster. So you have 12 forwards, four lines of three forwards, and then three lines of two defensemen. So that's 12 and 6, 18. So you have six free agents, three unrestricted free agents in Brett Connolly, Brooks Orpik, and Devontae Smith-Pelly, and then three unrestricted free agents in Jacob Vrana, Christian Juice, and Andre Burakovsky. I like the points that JJ made, particularly about Brett Connolly. Maybe he had a great year and was really productive for Washington in the playoffs. And maybe that will probably draw him some interest from some teams that are going to be willing to maybe shell out a little more contract-wise, a little more money and a better role than what Washington is willing to give him. And then, as he mentioned with Brooks Orpik, that ship basically sailed when Radko Gudas was acquired and Matt Niskanen was sent packing to Philadelphia. As JJ mentioned, that Orpik and Gudas are very similar in terms of their on-ice play, whereas Gudas is a little bit more physical. He's kind of similar to Tom Wilson in a way, in that, you know, they are very very physical. As I mentioned, they like to throw their bodies around. They draw penalties with their bodies, and Gudas is one mistake from getting a similar suspension from the NHL as Tom Wilson did to start last season. But I did like his point in that you can't really compare the two. And he did say that Gudas is trying to clean his act up, and that he did cut his penalty time down significantly last season, and that he seems to be a good fit for the third line. And really, as he mentioned, in terms of free agency, the bottom line guys are really what Washington is going to be looking at trying to fill in terms of, you know, who to bring in and where to place potential future players. Because as he said, Washington is in win now mode. They locked up a lot of these core guys, including John Carlson, TJ Oshie, Alex Ovechkin still has some time on his deal. And, you know, the core of this team is in place for years to come, and they want a Stanley Cup with these guys. So they know how to win with these guys. They don't really need to add more superstar talent in order to really accomplish their goals of playing for another Stanley Cup. They just have to, you know, they have to play the 82 game season, and then, you know, depending on how that goes, they have to be able to pull it all together in order to be successful in the postseason, which there were signs of success in the Carolina series, but it ultimately fell flat, and Carolina was just the more gritty team, and they found a way to overcome a two-goal deficit in Game 7 and send the then-defending Stanley Cup champions home packing. In terms of the unrestricted free agents, it seems like Jacob Vrana is no doubt going to be getting a new contract with the Capitals and will be returning to the Capitals. Whether that contract comes this summer or after next season, it seems like there's really no doubt that Jacob Vrana will remain a Washington Capital. Christian Juice is a maybe. They're hoping, it seems like the front office is hoping that they can get Juice on a bargain in terms of his average annual value and maybe his overall contract, just as a lower line guy. So that's something to keep an eye on. And then it seems like Andrei Burakovsky's time in DC is done. He mentioned that in order to lock Burakovsky in for next year to avoid free agency, they would have to give him a one-year deal worth $3.25 million. And it seems like that's not really worth the investment, as Burakovsky has had injury issues and his productivity on the ice just hasn't really been there. So just some notes that I took listening back to that J.J. Regan interview. And, you know, take some time between now and sort of when the heat of free agency kicks in to go back and listen and see what J.J. Regan is saying and see if it comes true, or, you know, if things change, because you just never know half the time whether or not, you know, the team is actually going to follow through on what some of these reports are saying in terms of just different guys on the ice and in the dressing room. So I looking at the Radko Gudas trade, I think I do like the Gudas trade a little bit, just because Gudas is a guy like Carl Hagelin. When I talked about the trade deadline, you know, the penalty kill and the power play, Gudas is a guy that you're gonna wanna have on the ice for your team when you're up a man. And Gudas seems to possess that offensive mentality that Washington will need in order to, you know, keep an offensive zone on a power play and also go get the puck and bring it back up quickly and help the forecheck establish the zone on a power play. And also Gudas has 1 year left on his contract. And I think I read somewhere too that Philadelphia will actually be eating part of Gudas' salary for 2019-2020. So the cap hit there in terms of, you know, the Capitals eating some of Gudas' salary, it's going to be very minimal, which is very ideal. As JJ mentioned, the salary cap could be anywhere from $81 to $83 million, and that Washington could be right up against that cap. So in terms of their spending money in free agency, it'll all just depend on where the NHL sets the salary cap. And he mentioned that Brian Boyle could be a potential fit for what Washington is looking for in terms of a, you know, not necessarily a superstar, but not a nobody either. Brian Boyle actually ranked 26th on Hockey News list of top 30 free agents in 2019, and he was noted as being great on the penalty kill, like Gudas, and great in the faceoff dot, which was an area where I talked about in January when Washington went on that slump. That's really an area of the game where Washington just couldn't get any sort of productivity and really couldn't be successful, was in the faceoff circle. So if they could go out and get a guy like Brian Boyle, who has been proven to be effective in winning faceoffs and generating chances or executing a set piece on a faceoff, then they should. His cap hit in 2018-19 was $2.55 million, which, as J.J. Regan said, if they have about $3 million to play with and they know that they can go get a guy like Brian Boyle for, let's just say, $2.8 million, which isn't at the top of the limit there. They're still under the salary cap, and Boyle is still getting a little bit of a pay raise from what he was making last season. So I like that. I like that prediction as well. I like that assessment from J.J. Regan in terms of Brian Boyle and free agency. They want to go after bottom line scoring and change up the look and the mentality of the fourth line. As he said, they can't be a checking line anymore. This game has changed so much over time that you can't really have a goon line, and you got to have guys on all four forward lines that are capable of going out there and creating scoring chances and putting pucks in the net. And, you know, this game is so fast now. It's you know, the offensive mentality of the game is what hockey's all about now. People want to see guys dangling. They want to see guys make tape-to-tape passes. And, you know, that's really what it's all about. And you got to have guys that are going to go out there and not necessarily go out for a shift with the mentality of we're just going to go rough up our opponent and hope that they don't get a break and score one on us. You know, we want to go out there and maybe make a couple of good hits, but at the same time, we want to keep the pressure up. We want to give the opposing goaltender a test and see what he's capable of doing and see if he can stop us. And, you know, the fourth line can either kill a lot of offensive momentum or it can really help the offensive momentum. And as we saw from a guy like Brett Connolly in the playoffs, when you desperately need someone to score in a big game, in a big situation, you're going to want someone like Connolly on your fourth line, third or fourth line, to go in there and give you guys the scoring that you need. So in terms of free agency, I like what he was saying. I'm definitely feeling what he was setting out there. So looking ahead to the draft, you know, there's no way to tell what they're going to do at 25. As he said, they could trade up. They could trade down out of the first round. The benefits of trading up are that they could lump some salary, some player contracts, some guys that they may not necessarily want around anymore, and lure a team in the top half of the draft to trade down, get the other team to trade down, and then put the caps in around 13, 14, 15, 16, in terms of the draft order. So, it's just no way to tell. He mentioned, the possibility of drafting a forward. Whereas in the last three drafts, Washington has drafted defensemen. 20 of Washington's first round picks have been defensemen. So could this be the year that sort of trend is bucked? There's no way to tell necessarily, but J.J. Regan feels like Washington could go out there and go pick up a forward in the draft, which would be a nice change of pace, you know, considering the history And he also mentioned that the Western Hockey League, which is the junior league part of the Canadian Hockey League, is where Washington has looked the most over time for their prospects. And in fact, the WHL is Washington's biggest source of draft picks and prospects. They have 18 former draft picks in Washington history have come from the Western Hockey League. So, you know, there's numbers backing all this stuff up. So there's just, it'll be interesting to watch on Friday and in the later rounds on Saturday. And, you know, there's just no way to tell. I think it'll be interesting to see. I like what he had. I really liked him filling us in on sort of how the time constraints work in terms of a guy being drafted and maybe deciding to go back to wherever it is they were drafted out of, whether that be junior hockey, whether that be in Europe or Russia or overseas, and play and remain with their professional team. They still have X number of years, or even going back to college, they have 4 years. If they're drafted, let's just say they're drafted as a freshman out of a Division I or Division III school, because there's no Division II hockey. If they're drafted out of D1 or D3 as a freshman, they still have 3 years to play. And then by August 15th, after their senior year, they have to decide whether they're going to join their parent club, and whether that's in the minors or if they're NHL ready, or they will become a free agent. So there's just, you know, there's a lot of fine lines there. There's a lot of time. Time is mainly the big component in all this. And it is a baseball type of mentality when it comes to prospects. You know, you may not have heard of the first round pick that your team drafted, but there's a possibility that you will know who that person is in due time. So you just have to wait 3 or 4 years. You know, there's plenty of guys that have NHL experience that don't need that time to develop. So, you know, in the meantime, you got to look at what your team currently has before you go, okay, well, what's our number one pick from 2019 going to do? Or what's our 2018 number one pick doing? You know, why haven't we seen them yet? Whereas you look at your team, like the Capitals, they won a Stanley Cup within the last 2 years. And, you know, that stuff, you know, you're okay with seeing who they draft and going, who the hell is that guy? I don't know who that guy is, but one day you will. You just have to give it time. There's just no way, you know, guys like Jack Eichel and Jack Hughes, those guys are, you know, they're rare. And there's a reason why they're going number one overall in a draft. And those guys are NHL ready, but you're not going to see them on a team like Washington, who has like the 20th pick in the first round. There's just a big discrepancy in terms of the quality of the player from pick one to pick 31. And these front office guys, they've been around the block. They know what's up, and that, you know, the fans should know this by now if you've been following a team long enough. But I did ask JJ Regan what he thought were his most memorable draft picks or draft trades. And he mentioned the story of Alex Ovechkin, which I thought was really cool. I had not heard that story before, so that was really awesome for him to throw that out there. Picture the Florida Panthers with Alex Ovechkin, and then picture the Washington Capitals without Alex Ovechkin. What kind of future would Washington have without a guy like Alex Ovechkin, who, as of this recording, became the first player in NHL history to win the league's top scorer 8 times. The Rocket Richard Trophy as the league's top scorer. He scored 51 goals in 81 games. The only reason he didn't play in 82 games was because he skipped out on the All-Star game in January and was suspended for 1 game. He was healthy. He was productive. And I don't know. It's hard to fathom an idea like Alex Ovechkin being on any team other than the Washington Capitals. You know, God forbid he gets injured. I think that Ovechkin will remain a Washington Capital. I think he'll finish his career as a Washington Capital. He will undoubtedly go down as one of the greatest Washington Capitals in history. Mark my words. He's got the numbers to back it up. He wants to catch Wayne Gretzky on the all-time scoring list. I think he can do it. He's going to have to be really productive here, as people think that he's sort of on the downward trend of his career. He's past the peak time of his career. He has a championship under his belt. The only thing he's really missing is an Olympic gold medal. But other than that, he's achieved just about everything you possibly can achieve in the NHL. But I digress. As I was saying, I asked J.J. Regan about what his memorable trades and draft picks in Caps history were. I just want to run through a list that I've compiled of the 3 most memorable trades in Capitals draft history that stand out to me the most. So bear with me here. Number 3, we go all the way back to the year 1993. Washington acquires Craig Berube from the Calgary Flames in exchange for a 5th-round pick. Now think about that for a sec. You might know that name, Craig Berube, because he just finished leading the St. Louis Blues to the 2019 Stanley Cup Championship, the first Stanley Cup in St. Louis Blues history, as their interim head coach. Not as their head coach, their interim head coach. Remember, St. Louis, much like Carolina, did a worst-to-first sort of thing, whereas St. Louis literally was the worst team in the NHL January 1st, barely made the playoffs, but somehow managed to be the ones on top of the mountain in June. Craig Berube was the head coach. If you aren't a big Caps historian, you would know that Berube spent the latter part of 8 seasons in Washington. He played 6 seasons in a row in Washington from 1993 to 1999. Including being a member of the 1998 Stanley Cup final team. Berube ranks 7th on the all-time NHL penalty minute list with 3,149 minutes. Number 2, the year's 2008. And you might think that you might remember the only thing about the 2008 NHL draft for the Caps was that Nicklas Backstrom was the guy. But the 2008 draft of the Caps is my number 2 most memorable in terms of Caps trade history in the NHL draft for this reason. After drafting center Anton Gustafsson with the 21st overall pick in the first round, Washington traded Steve Eminger and a 3rd-round draft pick that year to the Philadelphia Flyers in exchange for the 27th overall pick. Who went to the Caps at number 27 that year? A little trivia for you. That guy that went 27th overall was none other than John Carlson. John Carlson made his NHL debut just over a year later on November 21st, 2009. He became the regular defenseman for the Caps beginning with the 2010-11 season. And between 2010 and 2018, when Washington won its first Stanley Cup, Karlsson amassed 333 points in 608 regular season games and 55 points in 100 playoff games. And last summer, as you may remember, the Caps and Karlsson agreed to an 8-year, $64 million contract, likely seeing to it that John finishes his NHL career in Washington. That's number two. This might be, you might think of this as sort of like a Johnny Carson or a David Letterman list, the top 10. So finally, we're at number one. My number one Caps trade in draft history that stands out to me the most as most memorable. We go back to 1987. In 1987, there are only 21 teams in the NHL, including the Hartford Whalers, Minnesota North Stars, and the Quebec Nordiques. Washington is on the heels of a fifth consecutive appearance in the Stanley Cup playoffs and owned the 15th overall pick in the draft that year. The Caps ended up trading that pick. Gaetan Duchesne, I'm probably butchering that name, and Alan Haworth to Quebec in exchange for goalie Clint Marl... Let me say that again. Clint Mal... Wow. The Caps ended up trading that pick, Gaetan Duchesne, and Alan Haworth to Quebec in exchange for Clint Malarchuk, who you might remember for his gruesome injury suffered in 1989 while playing in Washington, in which he took a skate blade to the neck. And then some guy named Dale Hunter. Now, you probably just heard that and go, whoa, 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 whoa. How do you think, what kind of Caps person, what kind of Caps fan are you if you just say Dale Hunter is just some guy? Well, I know who Dale Hunter is. Hunter at the time had only played in the NHL for 7 years. But after being traded to Washington, Hunter would go on to play 12 more. He'd play in the 98 Stanley Cup Final alongside Craig Berube. Hunter has his number retired inside Capital One Arena and was known for his physicality on the ice. Hunter also played every regular season game in 5 different seasons between Quebec and Washington. Dale, as you'll remember, was head coach of the Caps for the 2011-2012 season. But the reason that this is my number one memory in Caps trade, Caps draft trade history is not necessarily because of Dale Hunter. No, no, no. It's because of what became of that 15th overall pick for the Quebec Nordiques. Who did Quebec draft in 1987 with the 15th overall pick in the NHL draft? Well, you might have heard of him. The guy's name? Joe Sakic. Joe Sakic would go on to win 2 Stanley Cups as the Nordiques were relocated to Denver and became the Colorado Avalanche. Sakic would eventually be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. So, the Caps have some history there. You know, and Washington has actually gone out there and helped other teams with their draft picks. And as J.J. Regan said, you draft the best available player. And for the Quebec Nordiques, in June of 1987, Joe Sakic was the best available player. Who knew that in Quebec that they would have a bona fide Hall of Famer on their team that year? Or eventually would have a bona fide Hall of Famer on their team. And then, sure enough, Quebec doesn't have a team anymore. Neither does Hartford. Minnesota didn't have a team for a while either. It's kind of, you know, I can kind of see why fans in Minnesota and Quebec would be a little bitter. And in Hartford too. It's funny. All 3 of those teams, the Quebec Nordiques, move to Colorado, win 2 Stanley Cups. the Minnesota North Stars relocate to Dallas, become the Dallas Stars, win a Stanley Cup. The Hartford Whalers. Brass Bonanza. They move the team from Hartford to Raleigh, North Carolina. Everyone goes, why in the world would you move a team to the South? The South is not a hockey place. Carolina wins a Stanley Cup. And they damn near almost went to the Stanley Cup final in 2019. If it weren't for the pesky Boston Bruins who crushed all of that momentum that Carolina had built, surviving a 7-game series against Washington and then sweeping the New York Islanders in the conference semifinals. It's just funny how it all works out. Hockey's a really fickle game. But I want to know, what do you think of all this? Do you agree with me? Do you think that the trade rankings that I have for the Caps, do you think those are solid picks? And then before I go, I should just mention my top three Caps draft picks of all time, or not my top three, but my top draft picks in Caps history. I agree with JJ Regan in that Alex Ovechkin is at the top of that list, but in no particular order, here are some of my others: Nicholas Backstrom, Braden Holtby, Peter Bondra, Ole Kolzig, Sergei Gonchar, and Scott Stevens. Let me know what you think at @J_Bondurant. Shoot me an email, jordan.bondurant@entercom.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you think. What are you expecting out of the Caps in free agency and in the NHL draft? We're less than 90 days. We're less than 3 months from preseason hockey. It's amazing how the hockey season runs so long. The middle of September is when the preseason will start, and then you have training camp starting just after Labor Day. And then from then until June, hockey season is here. It's crazy. And then it's not even really a three-month break. I mean, the season ended when? June 11th or June 12th or something like that? And then September 16th is the first Capitals preseason game at Capital One Arena. So we're looking forward to that. I know I am. And I'm looking forward to getting out to D.C. and immersing myself among brighter minds and more creative writers and people that are actually with the team on a regular basis. I like to think that I'm slowly working towards something like that, but I am very thankful of the powers that be here in Richmond that gave me the opportunity to head to DC and down to Raleigh and follow that series as it went the distance. Really a dream come true for me, and I'm just super excited for the future and hopeful that you'll be able to hear me report on the Caps throughout the 2019-2020 season on News Radio WRVA and on Sports Radio 910 The Fan, and now on FM at 105.1. So on that note, just a little bit of a programming note. I might try and see what our friend Ben Raby of the Capitals Radio Network is up to. Might try to get his thoughts on the draft, after the draft, obviously, and hopefully over time, see what the Caps are doing free agency wise, and maybe pick his brain a little bit once the 2019-2020 roster is in shape. And yeah, a lot to look forward to. So if I can't get a hold of Ben, obviously I'm going to be on a little bit of a hiatus. It's June now. And like I said, in September, that's when things get going again. So it's not too long. I mean, obviously, the Caps postseason ended in late April. So this is my first episode since April. So, yeah, took a little bit of a hiatus, but I'm glad to be back. I felt like it was needed. And again, let me just say, send my sincere congratulations to the St. Louis Blues for winning the Stanley Cup. A lot of people thought that it was Bruins in five after Boston just decimated Raleigh, the Carolina Hurricanes. But Carolina was incredibly beat up, and I think they had pretty much, they were exhausted. And, you know, hearing Rod Brindamore speak, I think that was pretty much, you know, they were going to be lucky if they did make the Stanley Cup final. And their luck just ran out when they ran into Boston. So, again, congrats to St. Louis. And as J.J. Regan said, you would think after the Caps won the Stanley Cup that they would try and pursue an All-Star game. It just so happens that the 2020 NHL All-Star game is in St. Louis. So, funny how all that works out. But on that note, I'm going to wrap this episode up. I want to thank you so much for listening. I want to thank J.J. Regan from NBC Sports Washington for spending some time with me. We went through a little bit of a hiccup in terms of, you know, just recording stuff and me as a board op trying to, you know, do my job. So I want to thank you. Thank him for his time and calling me back. I tried my best to make that interview sound good. So, again, I'm out of here. Enjoy your summer. Enjoy free agency. Hit me up on social media. You know where to find me. Go back and listen to some of the other episodes and interviews that I've posted, as well as my coverage of the first round series in the 2019 Stanley Cup playoffs. So, again, thank you so much for listening. Let's go, Caps. Have a great summer, everyone.
Hello out there. We're on the air. It's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh.